Well, good morning. Last Sunday, we talked about a man in the Bible that, in spite of all that came against him, he was able to be used mightily. His name was Joseph. And this morning, I would like to use the other term that we've kind of introduced a few Sundays ago. And that is because of, it seems like that Joseph was able to fulfill his calling, if we can call it that, in spite of all of the calamities that came to him, being sold as a slave, being thrown into prison, being forgotten, all of those things that seemed to come against him, in spite of all of that, he stayed true. Somehow he had a grasp on God and his calling for life and was able to follow through with that. This morning I want us to shift gears. Well, maybe that was more than last Sunday, but Yeah. We talked about how that it seems like sometimes, in spite of all that we do, things don't turn out right. We can do everything right, so to speak, and yet there's a decision made to do the wrong thing. It's not turned out for good. I would say that if I went around the room here, every one of you that is a parent now or has been a parent and your children are grown and out on their own, I think all of you have a desire to provide solutions to some of the problems that you had as a child and as a teenager and young adult growing up. I've told you multiple times that I felt like I had good parents. I was raised in a good home. They taught me a lot of valuable things, and yet when I got married and we had children, there were things that my wife and I talked about. I said, I want it to be different. This is a little area I want to improve. I don't want my children to have to experience some little hardship that I felt. And I would say that every one of us here, you got children in your home, you've been a parent, Brother Dave and Sister Sheila, you got grandchildren that's adults now, or almost adults, and I know that there's things that you looked on and said, I don't want that to happen to my children. I want it to be different for them. I did that. Every one of us did that. And we want them to be able to be better situated in life because we made a good choice for the home and for them. And there's nothing that is more disappointing to a parent or someone that's trying to provide something better for those around them. There's nothing more disappointing or more brings more grief than people not appreciating and capitalizing on that. You could have been raised in a house without running water. That's almost unheard of now, but I had relatives when I was growing up that there was no bathroom in the house. There was no place to take a shower or a bath. If you were going to clean up, you had to pour water in it, carry water in from a well, and you had to heat it on a stove and all of those kind of things. Well, I wasn't raised that way, and my children weren't raised that way, but did I really appreciate it? Did I really know how to appreciate that? You know, I was raised in a home where my mother and father didn't fight. They got along. My dad went to work every day. My mother fixed us good meals. She made sure the house was clean. All of those kind of things. But did I really appreciate, did I really capitalize on it like I should have? If my ancestors would have been able to flip a switch and grow up in that atmosphere, would they have profited more than I did? That's always a question. But it's because my parents provided those things that maybe they didn't have as a child, or, and I've just named things that my parents didn't have as a child that they provided for me. And I know they did it because they wanted things to be better for me. They wanted me to profit from it. And somehow, I think we don't know how to communicate the importance of that sometimes as in a home to the children. I'm providing this for you because I want you to be in a better position than I was. So that's something y'all might think about, you that have young children. Somehow, Lord, help you not to communicate the importance of why you do some of the things you do is because you want them to be better equipped. So I'm going to read to you today. Let's go to the 2 Timothy over here in the New Testament in the first chapter. We're going to read a few verses here, and then we're going to get to the main character of our thought this morning. We read this a few Sundays ago, and we'll read it again. 2 Timothy, the first chapter, I'm going to start reading in the third verse. He says, "I thank God, whom I serve for my forefathers with pure conscience, that without ceasing I have remembrance of thee in my prayers night and day." So there's a real relationship between Paul that was writing this and the one he was writing to, which was Timothy. He says, "Greatly desiring to see thee, being mindful of thy tears, that I may be filled with joy. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded that in thee also." So because he had a couple generations of family that had embraced following God, and I believe that at least Timothy's mother was introduced to Christ and the gospel message, and now Timothy, being a young man, had embraced the same concepts that his mother had embraced. I believe Timothy's father quite possibly was not a Jew, and yet he followed his mother's convictions, and instead of worshiping a pagan, I don't know where his father was. Maybe his father had accepted Christianity too. We don't know that for sure, but we do know that his mother had, and we know that Timothy did. Because his mother did, he did. Because you live a consistent Christian life in the home, many times the children follow that pattern. And I want to encourage you to give them you give them that precedence and let them absorb that. Let them benefit from that. And maybe somehow we have to communicate. I think it's our job here as a congregation to help communicate to the little children that's growing up how much of a blessing it is to live in a home and grow up in a home where your parents pray with you and read you Bible stories and have family worship and you learn good principles and how to behave and sit still and cooperate with siblings and other children and all of those kind of things. And they're interested in you being equipped for life. Timothy had that. I don't know if he had siblings or not, but he was in a position that he could be used in the gospel, promoting the gospel, because he not only had a mother, but he had a grandmother that had given themselves to worshiping and following the Lord. So now I'd like for us to turn to the main character I'd like for us to look at this morning. It's in 1 Samuel, and we'll want to read the first, in the third chapter to begin with. I'll read a few verses here. First Samuel chapter 3, and we'll begin reading in verse 1. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli. And the word of the Lord was precious in those days. There was no open vision. So Samuel was coming. It says he ministered unto the Lord before Eli. Eli was the priest. He was the one in charge of the worship services or rituals in the tabernacle at this point. And it says the word of the Lord was precious in those days, and there was no open vision. So the commodity of a godly life and really understanding what the law was, the old law, the Old Testament, and being able to be part of that and having a vision for yourself about that and what it helped in life, it wasn't common. It was precious. It was rare. It was hard to come by. It's like things that you today, if it's precious, it means it cost a lot of money. It's hard to find. Once in a while we'll have someone bring us a vehicle that's maybe 20 years old and it has 20,000 miles on it. Well, that's precious, if you will. There's not many 20-year-old vehicles that have 20,000 miles on them. So it came to pass at that time when Eli was laid down in his place and his eyes began to wax dim that he could not see. And ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep, that the Lord called Samuel and said, and he answered, "Here am I." And he ran unto Eli and said, "Here am I, for thou callest me." And he said, "I called not. Lie down again." And he went and lay down. And the Lord called yet again, "Samuel." And Samuel rose and went to Eli and said, "Here am I, and thou, for thou didst call me." And he answered, "I called not, my son, lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time, and he arose and went to Eli and said, "Here am I, for thou didst call me." And Eli perceived that the Lord had called the child. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, "Go, lie down, and it shall be, if he call thee, thou shalt say, 'Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel answered, Speak, for thy servant heareth. Okay. So Samuel is probably somewhere in the age of 3 to 6 years old. And he's learning how to listen. He didn't know the Lord, but yet he's learning how to respond. He thought that it was Eli calling. So, and he went to Eli, and Eli was not his father. Eli was the priest. And he went to Eli and he said, "Here am I. You called. I heard my voice, my name called in the middle of the night." And after 3 times, Eli realized, this is probably the Lord wanting to talk to Samuel. He's a little boy, but I think he wants to talk to him. So to get to where we're at right now, I'd like for us to back up and see, how did this happen? We got a little boy, 3 to 6 years old, most likely that's his age, and he's in the temple or the tabernacle with Eli, the priest. Mom and daddy's not around, and yet he's got a level of maturity. We got anybody that's 6 years old here today? Pretty close. How would you like to be away from mama and daddy? Don't sound very good, does it? But Eli was his only one he had to talk to. Mom and daddy wasn't there. So let's back up a little bit to the first chapter of 1 Samuel. I want to notice the 11th verse. It says here, I'll back up and tell you a little bit before, not just read it all. You're welcome to read all of this. There's this man, his name was Elkanah, and he had a wife named Hannah. And Hannah didn't have any children. And Hannah was very, very desirous to have a child. And every year when Elkanah would go up to worship at the temple, at the tabernacle, he would give things to Hannah to sacrifice. And he had another wife. He had two wives. And the other wife had children. And as you can only imagine, the other wife pointed out that Hannah didn't have children. And she made Hannah feel bad for that. And Hannah was feeling the pressure of that. But even if the other wife had not had children, Hannah would have still wanted children. All right? That was her desire. And so Elkanah gave her sacrifices, and she went up there, and she was praying. And she was, it just, the Bible says that she was in so much earnest prayer that her lips were moving, but she wasn't making any sound. And Eli, seeing her there in that state, thought that she was intoxicated. And he said, "Why are you drunk in here in a position of worship? You need to, don't do that." And she expressed to him her heartfelt desire to have a child. So in verse 11, she's praying, and she says, and it says, she vowed a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if thou will indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then will I give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head." And in the second chapter, in the 11th verse, this is where we want to go next. But Eli had basically told her, "You go, and the Lord grant your request." And in the 11th verse of the next chapter, It says, and Elkanah went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. So what happened between there? Hannah had a little child, and she was so excited, and she decided not to bring the child to the temple until he was weaned, until he was, you think about how old that might have been. That's why I say he was 3 to 6 years old, most likely, in that age bracket. What was she able to impart to this young child in that short amount of time? But she fulfilled her obligation, and she come and she left him there, and they all went home. And that 11th verse says in the second chapter, and Elkanah, that was the father, went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. And that's what we were reading about in the third chapter. Let's go down a little bit in the 18th verse of this chapter. It says, but Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Don't you know that was an emotional time? Every time she came, only got to see her little boy once a year. But she had made him a new coat every time she came. And she thought about her vow. She thought about her commitment. You know, Samuel was here because of Hannah's prayers. Samuel was able to minister to the Lord in the tabernacle because of his mother's instruction and his mother's vow. And Eli, it says in verse 20, second chapter, Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, the Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord. And they went into their own house. Don't you know that this little boy was a real blessing to Eli in helping him? I can see, you know, somewhere in that age bracket, and I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but somewhere in that 3 to 6 years old, your children want to help. Let them help. Don't wait until they're 13 or 16 to try to teach them how to be a help. While they're 3 and 6, let them help. Include them in everything you're doing. If they want to get right in the middle of you fixing the leak under the sink, let them climb in there with you. If they want to crawl up on the roof with you, let them get up on the roof. If they want to help you wash dishes, get them a chair to stand on and let them help you wash dishes. If they want to help you cook, let them stir the beans or something. I don't know. Let them do something. But teach them how, let them explore their desire to be helpful. And right during that time when Samuel was, his little mind was learning so much and he wanted to be helpful, Hannah consecrated him to the Lord, and Eli needed help, and I can see this little guy that was about a little above knee high following Eli around, and when Eli couldn't stoop over and pick something up and he couldn't see and all of that, Samuel did all of that. I can help Eli. I can help you with this. I can help you with that. They're going to be in their way, in your way, before they're really help. All right? That's just part of being a parent. So now I'll get back on our subject. Eli really appreciated Samuel being there. It was a real boost to his morale. It was a real help to him to have Samuel there. And he pronounced a blessing on Hannah and on Elkanah. It said, "And the Lord visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bare 3 sons and 2 daughters. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord." Not only did he grow up physically in his stature, but he grew in his ability of comprehension and understanding how to be pleasing to the Lord. Hannah was rewarded. You know, Samuel shaped Israel as much or more than anyone else ever did. Samuel was an outstanding spiritual leader in his age. We don't read of Samuel deviating. He was there until the very end to anoint Saul. And he grieved because the people, he felt like the people were rejecting God and choosing a king. And he prayed about that, and the Lord said, "Samuel, just do what the people want done. It's not you they're rejecting." You know, Samuel grieved over the nation of Israel wanting a king. But that's what they wanted. He was there and saw Saul's failures. He met him and told him, "Saul, you displease the Lord." He told Saul, "Obedience is better than sacrifice." I wonder where he learned that. I believe that from a little child, Samuel had chosen the path of obedience. Because of his mother, because of her prayer, because of her teaching, because he was willing to be subject to Eli, Samuel took advantage and prospered because of all of that. And he knew the blessing of obedience better than probably anybody else could ever imagine. He was there to anoint David. He was there most likely to know that David had taken out Goliath. Samuel was a man that shaped the Israelite nation. He was effectual because, not in spite, but because. I want us to get that thought this morning. Samuel was being able to do what he did because. Hannah was his mother, was enabled because Elkanah, her husband, empowered her. He could have cast her aside because she had no children, but he didn't do that. He gave her, he said in one place, if you read the details, "Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? He gave her the same type of sacrifice as he gave his other wife and all of her children. And because she was empowered by his love and equal treatment, she felt that she could importune with the Lord. And she got her request. But she was careful to make a vow to the Lord. She was enabled because of her husband. And he supported her decision to consecrate Samuel. You know how important it was for a man to have sons? I have it in my mind that Hannah was the first woman he married. Maybe not, but that's just what's in my head. And to have a son by Hannah was valuable to him. It was potential. It meant prosperity. It meant more work that could get done. And he was willing for his son, by Hannah, to be consecrated. And he was rewarded, was he not? They had 3 more sons and 2 daughters. A son meant a lot of potential. Samuel, was the Joseph of his generation. Remember Joseph done what God wanted him to do, but it was in spite of all the hardship. And I want to say that I applaud everyone that has rose above the hardships. And we have those in our congregation here that's arose above hardship that I don't understand. It's hard for me to relate to. I can say, yeah, uh-huh. I think I understand a little bit of what you're talking about. But I haven't experienced some of that because I had a different upbringing. And I applaud it. I appreciate the Josephs in our world. The Josephs in the church. The Josephs that in spite of everything that has happened to try to hinder them in their journey, they have found a way to stay true to the Lord. And if you're a Joseph here today, I want you to know I appreciate you from the depth of my heart. But I also want you that are Samuels to know that I appreciate you too. And if you've been, you know, some parents today feel like that to try to help their children, they need to provide them with so much things of this world. Provide them with a higher education. Provide them with a new car when they get old enough to drive. And provide them with this, provide them with that. And make opportunities happen for them and all of this kind of stuff because they want their children to succeed. And you know, in spite of all of that, many of those end up in failure. My boys got a car in spite of me. I told him, I'm not buying you a car. You want to drive? Figure out how to pay for one. You want insurance? Figure out how to pay for that. You want gas for the car? Figure out how to pay for that. You're going to have to learn to work for it. So I didn't start them out with a new car. They can't say, because my dad gave me a new car when I turned 16, I've done so well in life. No, it's going to be in spite of that. But I was determined that they would have a solid foundation of having a secure home environment and one where they knew that their parents loved each other and that there was plenty of food on the table, and they've all got taller than me, if you notice. I fed them good. It's because I fed you that you got as big as you are. It's not because you didn't have enough to eat. I wanted them, there are some things that I felt very strongly that I wanted to provide. And if you're a Samuel today and you've had that stable home and you've had a stable spiritual foundation to build on, capitalize on it, put it to good use, be a Samuel in your generation. I want to challenge you and encourage you today to take it to a new level. We're going to, Lord willing, we're going to fly out tomorrow, go to Austria. And I'm going to tell you, when I'm there and I'm trying to minister to somebody, it's always through an interpreter because I don't speak German. And I don't speak Russian. And there's somebody, I can't talk like I'm talking to you today. I have to say a sentence or two, and then somebody else has to interpret. So I feel like I only get about half out what I want to. But you know, I want to tell you there's something going on right now. There are young people today that are learning German, and there is German young people learning English, and they can minister to one another, and in the setting that they're in, they're being Samuels. There's a young man right now that's being a Samuel. He's learning German, and he's able to minister to those people over there that don't know English, because he's taking it to another level. And I want you all that's here, that's had that solid foundation, to be challenged to be a Samuel in your generation. Take what you've been given by your parents, by the congregation that you've been in, and build on it. Become a Samuel. You know, Samuel did things and got answers from the Lord. You know, when he went to anoint David to be the king, all of David's big brothers came out, and just looking, Samuel thought, surely, well, this one looks good, and that one looks like he'd make a good king. And he had all of these reasons in his head, but he was waiting for the Lord. And the Lord said, I don't want any of them to be the king. To the point that Samuel told Jesse, I'm going to paraphrase here a little bit. He said, Jesse, I know the Lord told me to come to your house to anoint a king, but all these sons of yours that's come before me, there's not one of them, the Lord said, is the next king. Do you have any more boys? And he said, well, the youngest, he's out with the sheep. And Samuel said, you better bring him in. And when he come through the door, the voice of the Lord told him, that's him. Arise and anoint him. But it was because Samuel was in contact with God that he was able to do that. It takes Samuels to be able to take things to another level. I don't know who all might hear this, but I want you to be challenged. If you're in a position to be a Samuel, be a Samuel. If you're in a position to be a Joseph, be a Joseph. We need them both. We need those that, in spite of all the obstacles, their testimony rings true. That they're able to be used for the deliverance of God's people. And we need Samuels that, because they have been a product of generational decisions to be pleasing to the Lord, they can take things to a new level. I want you to be challenged. It's a burden of my heart that we'd have more Samuels and more Josephs among us. You pray for me.